It's time for Declare Your Independence with Ernest Hancock. To be a part of the show, call 1-800-313-9443.
Believe me when I say we have a difficult time ahead of us. But if we are to be prepared for it, we must first shed our fear of it. I stand here without fear because I remember that I am here not because of the path that lies before me, but because of the path that lies behind me. I remember that for 100 years we have fought these machines. And after a century of war, I remember that which matters most. We are still here! Today, let us make them remember. We are not afraid!
Yeah, we're not afraid here on Declare Your Independence with me, Ernest Hancock, and you don't even need a government form. See how simple that is? I mean, you know, it's kind of like you go in the room and you whisper to yourself, you know, I think I'm going to declare my independence. Let's do that. You know, why not? You know, and once you make that commitment, you're going to lie to yourself? Really, seriously, are you going to lie to yourself? You're going to go in and say, you know, I'm going to, you know, declare my and then not? And, of course, with your friends, you're sitting there talking, you know, we ought to do something. I remember the scene in The Patriot where Mel Gibson's character, Benjamin Martin, his son, goes into the church. We're rounding up the militia. Here we go. And they're kind of like, well, really? Seriously? And then his future wife, the young lady, gets up and goes, oh, please, I've heard you guys talk about this for years. Yakety, yakety, and you're all pontificating on the value of freedom and how important it is. And now when it's time and you're sitting there, oh, man, you know, heck no. You know, I tell you, that's another thing. Adam Kokesh was at Jessup, Georgia there, was at Jekyll Island. And he made a point that I thought was, they always say the founding fathers. He goes, no, I specifically, not to be politically correct, but just to be correct. You know, it's the founders. Well, you think the women didn't have a part in this? What do you think the women were doing? They were, what, not feeding the guys doing it at the very least? I mean, something. And what we've found out here is that, you know, over the past decade and a half that we've had various different kind of workshops and so on, there's always been this thing, a lot of young guys, you know, libertarian coming up, hey, we're the women, man. What, you don't got no women? We'd rather go over the Democrats over there. They got more women. Well, that's your motivation, man. You just go right on over there. That's good, you know. But what's happened, you know, especially since this revolution, the Ron Paul thing, I tell you, last couple of years, the women have turned out. You want to know, they're here, young, good-looking women like Gwen. She's going to be a rock star on TV, too. Already started doing some YouTubes and stuff in her video studio, having some fun. Now, Gwen, go ahead and tell us about you and Andrew, your project, and what brought that on. Because you'd seen Freedom to Fascism, and that had the motivation of a lot of young people. And I remember a lot when we first opened the first revolutionary workshop, right in early 07, when Dr. Paul even thought about kind of sort of maybe having a committee to think about running. You know, it just exploded already. And the people that were coming, is they saw Freedom to Fascism, and then they started Googling. They're finding out, I mean, there's stuff in Phoenix. It's right down the street. Boom, they flooded in. You know, there was a band called Property Six that had their own roadies, man. They had their own people that were supportive of them and their fans, and they came out and helped. It was great. A lot of great YouTubes. You go to YouTube, just type in Ernest Hancock with no space, Ernest Hancock, and you go to that and go to the early videos, and you'll see the great videos that we did of the young people with lots of beautiful women like Gwen. Gwen, we got a really short break here and so on, and I want to segment here. So we'll go ahead and go into the next segment and hear about it. But Gwen and her husband took on the man. Here's somebody that just got exposed to what's going on, and they went hardcore against the top of the heap. Are you willing to do that? You know, where are you guys? Waiting on you now. You know, I'm so tired of all these people that are going, oh, you got to this and understand and know, and here's another book to read. I don't need any more books to read. You know, I'm good. It's time to engage. Waiting on you now. We'll be right back here on Declare Your Independence with me, Ernest Hancock from FreedomsPhoenix.com Studios, in just a little bit.
It's the Ernest Hancock Show. Where we're going, there aren't any roads.
Yeah, we're back. Sorry we didn't get that bumper going. Yeah, we're working out the bugs here. Jet's doing a great job. He's trying to juggle all these people in studio, making sure the signal gets out. We're working it out. Sorry, we're going to really start pushing it next week. And after we got everything all dialed in, but this week you get first crack at making sure you get to meet all of the people involved. And there's dozens. I mean, dozens. We had a bunch of people here last night from Normal having a meeting. Them damn marijuana legalizing people. Oh, that's another thing. In California, they got the Marijuana Policy Project. They're going on, we need to legalize marijuana so we can make revenue to pay for teachers or something. I'm like, what? Where the heck did that come from? Oh, heck no. You know, the lesson is very simple. It's my body. If I want to snort Clorox, man, that's my thing. We're going to have an anti-Clorox snorting law? You know, please, you're killing me. This is, once they concede that principle, then it's going to be, you know, they get to tax any and everything. You know, if it goes in my body, the government gets first crack at the revenue. You know, they do it with food. Seriously? I mean, you know, some states, we make a big deal out of that here in small communities. We'll have initiatives to take the tax on food off, or certainly staples or something like that. You know, so I'm going, wow, this whole concept. And you have the marijuana policy project coming out nationally. We're supporting marijuana in California to help them raise money so they can, like, spend it. Really? Wow, who got in charge of those guys? I don't even have to look, because I know what you'll find is tentacles into the man. You know, it's like this Bob Barr thing, the Libertarian Party. You know, the Republican kind of Cato-ish thing coming in, and they bring in this Bob Barr, and we'll kind of do this big tent and no more platform, and we'll just let everybody do whatever. And then they got Marijuana Policy Project. You know, guys that we've worked with before, we're all good. They're up there doing an endorsement. Oh, yes, we're here to support the former drug warrior, Bob Barr. You know, and without him even, you know, apologizing for what he's done in the past. And then you start to see this taxing thing in California. You start to see a trend. It's like neon freaking obvious. You concede the principle, then the rest of it's just a mop-up operation for him. You know, it's just going to be a revenue thing. Well, then you have young minds that get exposed to this stuff, and they're just going, the hypocrisy, certainly, of the lamestream media, the media that's so last century. Now, I got to tell you one capacity that we have here, and Gwen will tell you about it. We learned that we could make videos. We learned that we could, you know, copy them. We could get permission from various different people, or encouragement, or not permission. You know, oh, come make me stop. You know, but we're not permission askers. You know, we just do it. And a lot of times we have respect for people. We give them a call and make sure it's okay and what we want to do and such. But what we did is we found that we could make DVDs using different software, bring them in, combine them, compress them, put more than one movie on one regular DVD. It plays on your player, looks great, and mass duplicate them. There are machines that you can get called duplicators, and you load the information into a hard drive on it, and then it just replicates them in however many stack that you have. Now, we have 3 11 stack duplicators. That means we make 33 movies discs at one time, and it takes about 5 to 7 minutes depending on how much is in there. If it's just a little bit of information, take, you know, a couple minutes. So that means, you do the math, we make between 300 and 500 DVDs an hour. 300 to 500 DVDs an hour. What might we do with that capacity? I don't know. But we had, I'll give you an example. After we did this last project Gwen's going to tell you about, Sacramento Tea Parties, they contacted us, sent us 6,000 DVDs for us just to burn for them to distribute at their tea parties. What did they have on it? They had the Obama Deception and Freedom to Fascism. Aaron Russo's America from Freedom to Fascism. Those two together, wow, man, it had an impact. You know, and we'd go on. Of course, Alex had us on saying, ooh, man, you guys are demands and womans. Yes, we are. You know, and you take these tools. Everybody has a contribution. Everybody has a tool. But, you know, just you just have these movies or stuff sitting around on the counter. It doesn't do you any good. You know, you got to get them out. You got to free minds. How powerful is a freed mind? Well, I tell you what, it's not working for the man. You know, it's freeing other minds. to just stop working for the man. Gone, galt. You know, we're just, you know, withholding our productivity. Now, Gwen, tell us how this project, this idea came about, and, you know, you just started doing what?
Well, last spring, when Andrew and I first started getting a little bit involved, one of the first projects that we kind of did back then was on April 15th, the tax day. We picked up a bunch of DVDs of America's Freedom to Fascism, and we took them to a post drop at the mall parking lot, and we just distributed them to the cars driving by, you know, and there's other people out in the valley doing the same thing. And so this year, you know, we were all planning to do that again. The Obama deception had just come out. Andrew had seen it, and he thought that it would be fun to put them both on the same disc. And we were thinking about, you know, the tax day distribution. And then we also knew that Obama was coming on May 13th to ASU to give the commencement speech. And so once we kind of put all these ideas together, we thought, wow, we should, you know, give them out to all the ASU students so they have an idea of what Obama's really like when he comes. And so we put all the two movies on the same disc, and we used the DVD burners and burned, I guess, a total of 17,000, you know, from when we started. And we distributed them out before Obama came at ASU on the campus. And then the actual day that he came to give the speech, a bunch of us met down there and gave them to people as they were walking in to see the speech. And it was exciting.
I got a call. I don't know if you know this. I got a telephone call from a gentleman that was from Southern Arizona. I can't remember. It wasn't Tucson. I think it was past Tucson. I can't remember which city. Green Valley. Yeah, that's what it was. In Green Valley, and he had a daughter that went to ASU, and he was there for the graduation. And he saw the disc on the ground. You know, somebody had just dropped it or didn't want it or whatever. And it had our, you know, some of our logos and stuff on it, and it got his interest, and he saw the Revolution logo on it. And he picked it up, and he went and watched it that night. You know, I don't know how late if he went home or his laptop or something. But anyway, he watched it right away, and he called me, and he goes, "I need more. How many of those can I get? What do I got to send you?" And we never even thought of that. You know, that's when it started going, well, I don't know, send us the DVDs and we'll pretty much burn them. If you just want 20 or something, we can do that in 10 minutes. You know, here, take it. You know, knock yourself out. Come down here. And then my wife started getting calls, and we get emails. I would think that we've probably done a couple of thousand that way. You know, people just want to, you know, can I have 100? Can I have 30 from my family? Can I? Because this double feature, I mean, wow. Now, if you want, I tell you what, you go on the Freedoms. My email is publisher@freedomswithanSphoenix.com. publisher@freedomsphoenix.com. You give me a good story. You put the effort in. Write me a good email of how you got a few that you want to get out to just the right people. We'll get them to you, and you can copy them. They're masters. You can just make all kinds of copies. And, oh, what's the other thing, Gwen? You guys did some videos. Tell us about that. Mm-hmm. And then you're playing with the remote radio thing you were working on. So tell us some of that.
Yes, Sheldon, the 4409, he put together a couple of Operation ASU videos on YouTube for us, and I think there was a couple others besides that even, and they were really great, especially the first one with the background music, whatever it was. And let's see. Then also an idea that we had for when Obama came was to do the Obama FM, where we were going to loop the DVDs, you know, over an audio radio and have an FM transmitter so that people could tune in down near the ASU campus. We made a ton of banners for it, and we went out there and, you know, gave it a try.
The radio, it only has, man, it's really funky how you got to do this. You got to make sure you have the right length, the radio, and they're still learning it. We have two transmitters. So that didn't, you know, it did it enough to say we did it, you know, but it didn't have a big penetration and so on. But the big reason that we did it was for these banners, and we still have these banners, and we can go put those up. We got a bunch of them, you know, like dozens and dozens mm-hmm. of these, and the Obama deception and tune in to and all that kind of stuff. But the real impact, as we were doing the films and such, was to just make the bad guys nervous. You know, they're just, it's psyops. You know, and they're so predictable how they react. And the thing is that this is what I think the reason we got away with as much as we did and the things that we did was because Janet Napolitano, which was governor here and is now head of Homeland Security, which you know had something to do with his security coming here, they know exactly who I am. You know, we're friendly. I don't know if friendly is the word, but we're cordial. You know, we're not, because I don't see these individuals. Everybody's, well, this person is this and that, and they're bad, and even they, I'm going, yeah, so what? You know, there's 15 zillion other people behind them waiting to put on the badge that they got. And whenever you go after someone, this is one thing. When Rumsfeld was Secretary of Defense, hammering on Rumsfeld, hammering on him. And then he's gone, and now what? You think Gates is somehow better? You know, you go after an individual, you don't even, you know, understand what the position does or the policies. You know, it's just you hate that one person. You focus so much attention on the individual, and when they're gone, then what? I hate Bush. Yeah, well, it's not Bush or Obama. It's the system. It's just begging to be ruled. Stop. Stop. That's the inspiration that we have for a lot of these guys that come here. And the reason that they're so enthusiastic that they do take on these great projects is not, I don't do anything. I mean, that's probably why it works best, is because I don't do anything. What do? Here it is. Knock yourself out. Have fun. What can I do to help? You know, and if it's not my idea, even if I think it's kind of, you know, gone off the deep end a little bit, you know, I don't have to make excuses for it. It's not mine. And they learn something, they get better next time, and they keep getting better and better. Well, Gwen's going to keep getting better, and she's cute. You want to put her up on TV. You know, she's one of our rock stars. We got Penny Lane. You know, she does a great job. Danielle. Oh, Danielle's another cutie. 19-year-old girl, man, and she has got it together. So there's so many of us. And then you have Gene. You know, really adding to this. Declare your independence with us in just a little bit.
There are those that just want to be left alone. And those that just won't leave them alone. Which one are you? The Ernest Hancock Show. I'm the lyrical gangster. Dial emergency number.
Still love you like that. Nah. You're on Declare Your Independence with me, Ernest Hancock, in beautiful Phoenix, Arizona. You're not. It's from here. And in the studios of freedomsphoenix.com. Now, we had, you know, Gwen. You got to meet Gwen. And she has another documentary that they're working on. This is how you get these guys motivated and what they're motivated about. And this is how it works. They're, you know, probably going to start a family here pretty soon. You know, I have a granddaughter coming in a month. I'm, you know, looking forward to that experience and kind of... That's why I had kids to begin with. And I said, you're just vehicles for me to get grandkids. But, you know, I love my children. What will happen is they're going to make a choice on whether they're going to vaccinate or not, and if they do any, and what kind, and where they have them. And they'll start doing, we're sending, we got books and doing research and such on things like fluoride and vaccinations and, you know, just you want to go to the hospital. And, you know, all this stuff. We're really trying, this next generation is starting to unplug themselves. They're going, whoa. You know, we just don't, you know, line up our children like, you know, on an assembly line like it was the Soviet Union or something, and you just start, you know, putting syringes in them and pumping them with stuff from the very beginning. And, you know, with mercury, I mean, please. So what happens is now Pal Gammels, our senior editor, and he's got some skills. He's been able to add to the base of information for these people because of what his career was. And one of the things that Gwen and her husband are working on now, they want to do a documentary and doing some research on fluoride. You know, you always hear it's fluoride conspiracy, fluoride. I remember in the early 90s when I first started doing this, you know, fluoride was a big issue. You couldn't go to any gathering that there wasn't a cassette tape or papers or booklets or whatever on the dangers of fluoride. And I'm just, you know, and I got my own story on fluoride. I did some research and everything, and I'll tell it, you know, another day because it's an interesting story. But the bottom line, it came down to it's just removal of toxic waste. And oh my goodness, they might make some money at it. I'm just, you know, the solution to pollution is dilution, you know, through our kidneys. I know if it has a benefit side effect of making us a little bit more whatever the heck it is they want to chemically engineer us into being, well, so much the better. Because the real question to me was, does the government really care about my teeth? They don't care about anything else, but they love my teeth. You know, my teeth, you know, very good for me. They love me. Let me go ahead and introduce, but before we get to Powell, I wanted to make sure that we got to talk to Shelton a little bit because he's doing some camera stuff in here, and I wanted him to, real quick, tell you his story. You know, where did he come from and how did he get so talented? I mean, you know, this is just, you can see the creativity because Shelton, you know, we all have our foibles. And let me tell you what his is. Bull in China shop. Don't give the boy too many electronics, okay? I mean, don't let him near the dials. Man, don't touch that computer. It is just, oh, my goodness. But when it comes to doing videos and being creative, man, the boy's got skills. Welcome, Shelton. Tell us how you got started doing that.
Like I said earlier, I basically threw the Ron Paul deal, and I went to a meetup. And then the meetup, I met Tom Westbrook and blah, blah, blah. And then I met you, and that's kind of like how it got started.
Well,
but I didn't make videos until 07 or something. I just said, well, actually, I got started off this guy named Avermoth. He did a video called Stop Dreaming, the first Ron Paul video. And I thought, wow, gave you this inspiration. You got almost a goosebumps. You're like, man, this is like, wow, how powerful is a video that could make somebody do something like this? So I thought, I want to be a part of this. I want to try it.
Well, how did you learn? What was your first effort?
Just jacked around with it. I figured I had a movie maker and on Microsoft Windows and just started that way.
It's really that simple. And a lot of times we would have little classes and showing people how to do it. The very first video that was done of the Revolution, a guy named Dave Gallagher, he's in Philadelphia now, one of the original revolutionaries, and he brought the first night that we were making signs. Didn't even think of taking pictures or video or anything the first night we're getting things ready. And we made, from beginning to end, within a couple of hours, we start making our first sign. The technique that we use is really simple. And he had RonPaulRevolution.com, and we have RonPaulRevolution.org. Well, .com was the how-to. .org was kind of what we're doing and where we're going and stuff. Well, what happened was, the .com, he did these videos of us doing it, and we started adding to it. Here's the materials. This is how you do it. This is use a overhead projector or a digital projector, and you carve it out here and do this and do that. And, oh, and then we went and put them up. And then Pal had the idea at the time. It's a whole nother long story, but we were lighting up the little lights and the love and making them glow on the freeway, and we're just being crazy. And we go do this, and that was so inspirational to people because, wow, they're – did you get a permit for that revolution? You know, is there permits for revolution, really? Are there? No. So we started making the videos. I'm like, how'd you do this? And he showed me on Windows XP, you know, and all Windows products, and I'm sure, and Mac has it too. You go in, and there's a Movie Maker app that's already in there. It's free. You download the video from your handheld, and it goes in there, and you can edit it, shorten it, increase it, and you'll zoom in on it, put titles and transitions and other videos and such, and add to it, and you can be very creative. And that's another question I know a lot of people want to know. Where do you get all that video that you use to animate the beginnings and stuff?
Just from the web, just from the different things, here and there, man.
And, you know, he is such a self-promoter. But the thing is, you go to YouTube and you go to 4409. 4409. It's a secret. I tell you what, if you can guess what 4409 means, you get a free bragging rights. So we'll go ahead and talk about that when we come back. We'll see you in a little bit.
It's time for Declare Your Independence with Ernest Hancock. To be a part of the show, call 1-800-313-9443.
Yeah, you're back at FreedomsPhoenix.com studios here on Declare Your Independence with me, Ernest Hancock. In studio is Pal Gamble, and we got Shelton here, Mr. 4409, and he expresses himself best in video on YouTube. And we got Jack Gregson. Jack, you still there?
I'm still here.
Yeah, Jack, tell us, you know, before I get the Pal, you know, I'm kind of, before I let you go, I wanted to give you an opportunity to tell us how your writing and with the editing with Powell, because I know you make his job a lot easier. A lot of this stuff he was doing, and oh man, Jack did it all. You the man. So he's very appreciative of the work that you do. What kind of impact your writing on the economy and housing and so on has had on your immediate family? I mean, your family members in California and around, and your friends, and what's been their impact? Are they coming back going, oh yeah, you were right? Or are they like, damn it, you know, you were right? Or, I mean, what are they saying?
People live in denial, Ernie. I think that's human nature. People don't want to look at it. I don't go talking to people about it unless they bring it up. I just stay quiet, and I observe, and I don't bring it up because people really don't want to hear it.
Oh! I want to ask you this. I just remembered. I didn't get to mention it yesterday. A couple nights ago, I had dinner with my daughter and her husband and my wife, and at Benihana's. And there was a couple that was across from us, and they're originally from Mexico. And she was Wells Fargo training mortgage something, and he was a translator for a corporation. They lived in Scottsdale, and they, you know, they had some, you know, money. I mean, they're going to dinner at Benihana's, and they knew the chef by name. So I'm like, you know, wow, you know. But the thing was is that they were talking about there are multifamilies that are starting, like you have a matched .com, you know, where you're going out, or eHarmony or whatever, but you're doing it as a family to find people to go live with. They are now, families are coming together in single family homes to be able to have a place to live. And he was asking my opinion. He goes, do you think that multiple families should be able to qualify for loans together? Shouldn't the banks, you know, allow multiple families, you know, or multiple generations, you know, like your daughter right there and her husband, and you guys, you know, be able to qualify jointly to buy a home? And of course my daughter immediately, no, you don't have to. He's asking if the law should allow it. Relax. But the thing is that, you know, are you seeing anything like this? Have you come across this stuff?
Yeah, I am. There's a lot of people that you know, have been foreclosed on. There's more to come, and it's a trend, and there's nothing that's going to stop it. You have well over 9 million people that are going to be evicted from their homes in the next 3 years, probably 3 million to 3.5 million this year alone. And let's say you have 3.5 people per household, and you have 3 million homes. You're talking, you know, 10, 11, 12 million people that are now homeless. They have to go somewhere. And I know I've put up videos, Ernie, about trash outs in Southern California, where people leave everything. They leave their computers. They leave their big screen TVs. They leave their photos, their clothing, their furniture. Why? They have no money. They are flipping broke. They can't even rent a U-Haul. They just leave in the middle of the night. They leave everything.
You know, that was I remember we had videos on there. There was a news segment, I guess they did, in Southern California that we had on Freedom's Phoenix, and it showed these companies that are being paid to go clear out these foreclosures. And they back up a big, giant those waste construction dumpster things, and they just fill it up with they just don't have anywhere to put it. They just take it to the dump. I want to know where that dump is, you know, or they take it to some Good Samaritan organization, Goodwill or something. But what happens is, Salvation Army is what I was trying to think of. But what happens is they get to pick. You know, one of my daughter's boyfriends went on one crew that he did this for a little while. He's between jobs, and he went out, and you get to pick. You know, no, I already got three big screen TVs. You can have that one. You know, it's amazing what's going on. And the banks, they don't care. Just get that thing cleared out. And they're, oh, and this one thing I want you to talk about real quick before we go to Powell. What is the reasoning for them holding all of this real estate inventory and not selling it? I got my opinion, but what is the reason you think that they're just holding this, they're not putting it on the market? It's just building up and building up and building up inventory. What's the end result of that?
Well, they're doing it because if the banks foreclose on the loans, they have to carry that loss on their books. So they don't want to do it. Probably half the foreclosures are not being foreclosed on. People are just sitting in their houses waiting for the foreclosure to, you know, to happen, for them to be evicted, and it never comes because the banks will realize that loss on their books the minute they foreclose. And they're shaky as it is. They're leveraged to the hilt. B of A is under what they call double secret probation because of this, and just like out of Animal House, and the same with Citigroup. So this is something that's rampant, and it's getting worse. Obama is talking about creating a nation of sharecroppers, you know, and that's something very personal to me because of what happened to my grandparents. He wants people to live in their foreclosures and rent them from the federal government. So you will live in the house that you used to own. Okay?
And that's give the money and give the money to the government.
And give the money to the government.
And this
a nation of sharecroppers.
And this is different from the Soviet Union in what way?
Really, no way.
You know, I'm just—it's wow. Well, we're glad you're out there, Jack. You know, go ahead and hold on just a little bit. I want to give Pal some. The senior editor of Freedom's Phoenix does a great job making sure that every day the dispatch goes out, and twice a day people will get this in their email, the information that and the encouragement to participate and so on. And from you doing this, what's the trend that you've seen of the news cycle? You know, what the people are contributing. What's their focus?
Well, first, I'm really excited to be down here in the fabulous new studios down here. It's amazing. And to be sitting next to 4409, who was our first videographer, and I thank him very much because he definitely opened our eyes as to what the power of video was and what you could do with the really excellent quality, low, inexpensive cameras that were out there.
And still get arrested for doing it.
And still get arrested, absolutely, for holding a camera.
And we support him. We went to court on that one, and we won. So that is, you know, man. And I was surprised that the media didn't give him a lot more support because it was defending them.
Freedom's Phoenix started out mainly to support, frankly, talk radio show hosts. And we saw how powerful it was to basically decide what news we wanted, we thought was important, to get around the crap that they put out there on Michael Jackson and, you know, his death that they berated for 7 or 8 days while this health care bill and cap and trade and all these other bills were just basically being pumped through Congress at incredible speeds where they double and triple in size as all this garbage was added on, lobbying and bribes for their various congressmen for their votes. And, you know, without any consideration, massive shifts in the economy are taking place in a matter of literally days. And, you know, you get this thing right now with the health care bill saying, oh, we'll be voting for it sometime in August. And now you find out this, you wake up this morning and, oh, we're going to actually bring it up, I think, for a vote maybe today. And you're like going, what the heck is going on here? It's just amazing. So anyway, what was your question again?
the trend. You know, I mean, it's interesting to me. You see, there's so many contributors to Freedom's Phoenix, and I work with and help Pal on the editing of it and so on. But as a publisher activist, I really spend a lot of my time prepping for the show, doing a lot of the work down here at the workshop, making sure everybody's got their materials and so on. And a lot of people think that, you know, they always go, well, you're people. And I'm going, yeah, tell them that. And they'll go, Ernie who? You know, they don't know. All I do is make sure they got the materials they need or the place or the equipment or the razor blades, the projectors, you know. I have understood over a long period of time that if I make myself available to serve their needs, I can get 10 times, 100 times more stuff accomplished. It's just not, you know, me directing it, which is even better. Well, you know, Pal kind of does the same thing on the site. He provides all and the flow and the ebb and who gets approved to go to the front, because we do edit a little bit. I mean, what goes on the front page is, how's that determined? Because we have some people that are unpopular. Some people do not like them. Why are you putting them on the front page, Pal?
I will tell you, the single biggest thing anybody who wants to submit anything should do is, first of all, is this interesting? If you got a story that you're interested in, the odds are other people are interested in too. But a lot of times you see things submitted that just there's no interest whatsoever, or worse, you know, you have a finite bit of space to advertise your story. You have a very short headline. You want to make it as punchy as possible, because if people aren't attracted to your story and the link to it, they're not going to read it. So what was the point in bothering to write it in the first place? And so why do we put controversial people, people that are not libertarian, freedom-loving, up there? We don't have a whole bunch, but we do have a certain neocons and
our token neocon,
and our we have patriot people. We have our progressive guy who first started with Freedom Scenic when we first started, and he's been very good about it, and he's come around, frankly. Or I've come around to them. I'm not sure which, but as long as it involves not stealing anybody's money, I guess it's all good. But
now he's talking about Stephen Lindman. He's was a retired engineer, and he was on a kick. Hugo Chavez was his hero, and I'm just going, wow. But when you got to write 5,000 word articles to make your point, you probably got a problem. The return's a lot more brief because we just get to the core principle. But he had a lot of research, and it was very interesting. And what we understood is that the people that did support his position would come over to read it, and they got exposed to us. He has taken, brushed their cortex with that little libertarian brush, and all of a sudden it had an impact. So he's starting to come around, I think.
I agree. Or at least he's certainly broadened his tapestry into articles that I don't have any major disagreement with.
Well, one of the things that you have, oh yeah, Lindman, that's right, I saw him. He's on the station before us.
Yes, he does.
That's right. You know, I didn't even know that. I saw that on there. Yeah, Stephen. You know, I gotta listen to your show, Stephen. I gotta listen, see how you're doing, man. Because you know, we really enjoy having you over at Freedom's Phoenix. That's interesting. You know, I forgot about that. That's right. Jeff put that up there. Sorry, Steve. and pal, one of the other things, what is your – oh, that's another thing. We got enough time. Tell us what your background – people are going to find this fascinating. Pal's got skills. What was your job before doing Freedom's Phoenix?
Well, I was a bioterrorist. I'm a microbiologist, molecular biologist, and I was hired by the state of Arizona to form their bioterrorism detection section in the state public health lab back in 99, and I did that and ran it for till 2003, and I was pretty proud of that. At the time, I was a strong believer in public health because I figured nobody else was going to give a damn. Now, I will admit there's a lot of serious abuses that government has done, and in the name of public health, and you're seeing it right now, frankly, but you've got overall, I ultimately came to the conclusion that it was a waste of time because I watched what I thought was a very good program basically destroyed. And it came to the point where I decided, you know, I never had a great deal of respect for government in the first place. And that was where I finally said, that's it. There's no place for government anywhere anymore. I became an anarchist.
Well, I'll tell you this. You know, after 9/11 happened in 2001, all of a sudden, the Department of Homeland Defense gets created, and they had all kinds of budget, and you got – and I remember at the time you complaining they're wanting me to buy equipment that I got to put in the storage closet that I just don't have any place to put it or use it.
I spent millions of dollars. It was a lot of fun, but it was a waste. And a lot of things, government procurement, all sorts of just stuff you sit there and just shake your head at and go, this is garbage. People are being looted of their earnings for – this sort of stuff. And in the end, it really, really didn't accomplish a whole lot, which is sad. At the time I set it up, bioterrorism is garbage. I mean, for the most part, it's very hard to pull off. But I do believe there will be nasty outbreaks, naturally caused outbreaks, sooner or later, because they've happened in the past. And we've just been fortunate. And so I set up my bioterrorism detection section to try to deal with natural outbreaks as well, because there's really no difference between one or the other, except one is man-made. And
that was another thing. When they had the Ames anthrax that was going, I remember pals going, oh, this is military stuff, man. They are so lying to us. Tell us, just give us a, you know, 30-seconder on that one.
Well, actually, I don't really recall our discussion on that.
Well, it was Ames. You were saying that for them to be able to do the anthrax that they were using, that was going around, that they detected, couldn't have been made in somebody's bathtub.
Oh, you can't make up the anthrax. It's actually, I still don't really quite remember that conversation.
Well, you gave a presentation on it, and it was to do with how large the spores were that you had.
Oh, yeah. Okay, I remember what you said. At the time, they were saying that the anthrax that was present in to the senators' offices was so purified. It was literally about as theoretically pure as it could possibly be. There was literally no junk mixed in with it. It was pure spores just jammed in together, and they were saying they were coated with substances that kept them from sticking to one another. That's one of the reasons why I say, for the most part, bioterrorism is BS, because it's very difficult to actually make something for somebody on their own to do it. They may be able to grow it up, but to actually disperse it in a manner that's infectious is garbage. But they were saying, the FBI was saying, was quoted as saying, that these spores were so highly purified that, truthfully, only, frankly, highly funded government agencies could have done it. And, you know, now, of course, they're coming out and saying, oh, we never said that. We don't know. That was something the news media said, blah, blah, blah. And I'm going, well, if that's true, why did you let it sit out there for 2 years with that claim, and then now you come out with that? The other thing that bothered me is they actually published a scientific paper by some guys that discredited the idea that there was anything other than just garbage anthrax that had been mailed out to these unfortunate victims through the U.S. postal system. And the problem I had with that were the people that were making the claims. Clearly, you could tell that they weren't given access to all the samples, and yet they were making these broad claims that all the anthrax that had been mailed, et cetera, were this unpurified garbage that somehow they got lucky, and they actually managed to infect several dozen people. They killed approximately 11, I believe.
You know, this is the kind of skills that we have, and it's one thing, like Powell, you know, he's forgotten more than we'll ever know. He almost forgot. But I remember he gave a presentation at a function with this, and I was paying attention. I'm going, wow, this is good information. And, of course, it was on Freedom's Phoenix, and we shared it. And we'll share more with you when we come back here on Declare Your Independence with me, Ernest Hancock. We'll be back just a little bit.
Freedom's the answer. What's the question? You're listening to Ernest Hancock.
In constant sorrow through his day, I am the man of constant sorrow.
You know, this needs to be Shelton's theme song. He's constantly in trouble, man. You know, how do you get in so much trouble? Well, first, tell the people how easy it is, because you have a following. You're like an internet rock star, man. How does that work?
It takes a long time. It's not something you do overnight. I just kept putting more and more videos up, and then I just turn around. I got like 100 videos. I'm like, what the hell? How the heck? What, 100 videos on what? And then I turn around, that's 200. I'm like, 200 videos on what? I mean, I just don't know.
Well, who watches them? How many people? They have subscriptions. They have subscribers
on. Yeah, you can go on there and create your little YouTube account, and then you can subscribe to it, and then it'll go like in your little subscription box. So whenever you log on, boom, my video will be there, or whoever you subscribe to. So it's not that complicated.
Well, how many people are subscribed to your videos?
Like 7,500 right now. But it just, remember, we met like maybe a year ago, or maybe it was a little more than that, and we met over at Tom Westbrook's house, a freedom fighter, and I said, oh, man, I got 1,400 subscribers. Wow. You know, it was a big deal. And then just I said, man, it's going to start multiplying, because the first 1,000 is the hardest.
I tell you what it is. It's quality of content. You know, and then they share with other people, and those other people want them. And of course, they want to, you know, rip off some of your special effects and stuff, which you ripped off somebody else. So, you know, it's so this is how it's done. You know, this is what they do. And I have been, God, it was just recently. I knew you had subscribers and so on. It was like within the last couple of weeks, I went and looked, and somebody, I remember it was Jed. He sent me an email, something I wrote, and he goes, yeah, yeah, both your subscribers did whatever. And I'm like, I have subscribers? What's that? And I go look, and I got, I don't know, quite a few, a couple hundred or something like that. But, you know, I really, they can do this. So you can have, like, your own television network, your own station that people have. Anytime you submit something new, it goes straight to them. Well, there's getting up to almost 8,000 people want to watch, you know, 4409 stuff. Why? Because it's entertaining. And it's just activism. Well, what's the kind of stuff that gets you interested that you'll do it?
Just coming down here, I mean, it's... I mean, when you know that you can finally have an outlet to say something and sway people, like what you said, you're the minister of propaganda. So I kind of like took that from Ernie. when you have this, you can basically shape a person's mind or change their view on things. It's pretty powerful. And if you can go to like Freedom's Phoenix is a good outlet to post my videos. And now, like, you type in 4409 and the third thing down is like 4409 videos. Since now I've been putting them all on Freedom's Phoenix, it kind of like lines them all up. So if somebody clicks that on Freedom's Phoenix, it's got all my videos lined up in a row every time I put a new one up, so that's on top. So they all you got to do is go down the little list and boom, they
can
see
the videos.
Yeah,
he's talking about our categories. We have things categorized. He's got his own category for his videos. And it's, yeah, it's, you know, it's freedom propaganda. Yeah, that's one thing they, I was an officer in the Libertarian Party here last decade, and I went and I opened a restaurant and left that. I said, well, Ernie, we need some of your, you know, speak for different things and do some press contacts and go on talk shows, still talk and such. And I go, we need to give you some kind of a official title or something. I go, I got it. I want to be Minister of Propaganda. Because what do you think this is, you know? Of course that's what it is. It's propaganda versus the other propaganda. And you know what? Ours is better because we tell the truth. The truth. How powerful is the truth? How powerful it is to you? I'm glad you're getting to meet a lot of these guys. There's a lot more. There's a tapestry here. And we'll get Jed in here soon. He'll get his own show because it's not just me. I just know how to talk. We'll see you tomorrow again at 11 a.m. Central Time on Declare Your Independence.